Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Here with a gang of people, a gaggle. We have a gaggle. My gosh, there's so many people in the studio. Make you feel like a family. Chief of which is Sherry Siegel.
Hi, Armand.
Dr. Sherry Siegel, welcome back with us.
It's good to see you again.
I know you do such good work here. And, of course, there's Lawrence Sykes. And then there's standing by a couple of other visitors who may or may not join us. And on the phone, Lee Kravitz. Hi, Lee. How are you?
Great.
Good. Lee Kravitz writes a very interesting book called Unfinished Business. And he makes this statement, clean up your act in one form or another. Lee, give it to me. Tell me what you believe.
Well, I believe that it's very important, instead of just motoring on in your life, to take stock of it periodically, and I did in a big way, in order to examine your relationships, what wrongs you might have done to other people, and to re-energize yourself by doing the right thing. For me, that occurred when there was a trauma in my life. About 3 years ago, I lost my job. I was editor-in-chief of Parade magazine. And after 20 years of working all the time, you know, I was left to my own gut. Who was I? What did I want to do next? How would I spend my life? And I realized that I'd become disconnected from what really was important to me, my friends, my family, my three young kids, and that there were a lot of things I had done that I wasn't particularly proud of, that they were important things that I had let slip. There were promises I'd made and not kept. There were condolence calls I should have made. There were funerals and events that I had missed of important people in my life, and there were so many people I'd lost touch with who had helped me become the person I was and who I had not expressed gratitude to.
Well, so, Lee, a lot of people spend their lives in remorse, you know, saying, oh, I could have done this, I could have done that. I mean, that's just one of the signs of depression. How is this different? What is this evaluation different? I mean, a lot of people say I shouldn't, and a lot of other people keep beating themselves over the head.
The way it's different is that it means nothing to keep beating yourself over the head and to be just chained to all these should'ves and could'ves and would'ves, as you call them. What's important is to act on them, to mend relationships, to make relationships whole, and to get the very, very positive rewards of doing that. I can give you, and you know, another thing that's very important is that to do this, it requires facing your fears. One of the reasons we have depression and remorse is that I think we stay, tied to what we're afraid of. We don't move beyond it.
And Lee,
when you're, yeah.
Oh, sorry. What would you say your fears were before you went on this journey?
Well, there were a number of fears. I mean, I went on 10 separate journeys. There were 10 items of what I called unfinished business. And some of the fears, and they were very specific to each situation. For example, there was a friend of mine who had, his daughter had been killed in Iraq on a peace mission. I'd read about it in the New York Times, and I was still working then. I was still editor of Parade, and when I read about that, I was torn up inside and sat down and tried to write for 3 days condolence cards to him. I hadn't seen him in 40 years since we played on the same baseball team in high school. And yet, as terrible as I felt, I never ended up sending one of those cards. What were my fears? I feared that he wouldn't remember me. I feared that I would intrude upon his grief. I feared that I would write something stupid and trivial to him. And on a deeper level, I feared even going to the place where I could see something like that happening to my own young daughter. So those were the fears that prevented me from doing the right thing.
All right, so let's get down to, we're really talking about one specific thing, which has to do with, among many things, making amends.
Yeah.
Let's talk about making amends. Making amends comes from, well, there's a couple of theories of it. One is that making amends is different than apologizing, because it's with making amends, you're trying to restore justice.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Right, as much as possible. So now this is, I believe, a 12-step, part of the 12-step program, right?
Well, it's part of 12-step programs, but it's also part of virtually every religious tradition addresses making amends in some way. You know, it's part of atonement.
I don't know if Buddhism says making amends.
Well, it has a sense of karma. You know,
karma, okay.
That notion of karma, that you accumulate bad in your life. I mean, I felt that I was carrying around a big bad of bad karma on my shoulders, and that you can impact the future by rectifying what you have done bad. In other words, that our actions have some impact on our lives and futures going forward. But you're right, in 12-step programs, this is very crucial. You know, it's part of a number of the steps that you need to make a list of the people who you've wronged, and ponder what you can do to rectify that, that you have to apologize and make those amends directly to people, and that and except in a case where you might end up causing more hurt as a result of making amends directly.
So if you would, Lee, break that down for me. It's very hard for people to get away from guilt. And most guilt is unfounded that people have. And then there's a sense of remorse. Then there's a sense of responsibility. So if you're trying to figure out where need I make amends, if I want to clear my brain, if I want to clear my soul, when I go up to heaven, I'm going to knock on the door and he's going to say, you owe too many people things because you hurt too many people. If that's my belief, and I look at it and I say, okay, where can I clean up some of this stuff that I made a mess? So you look back on your life and you say, okay, I remember I had a son when I was 3 years old, and I ignored him the entire time he was born because I was angry at his mother. Now the kid's 25. I've got to make amends.
Right.
Because now I'm conscious of it. So I go to the kid and I say, I want to apologize for what I did by ignoring you. I feel sorry about it. I want to make up for it somehow. And he says, good, I need $10,000.
Well, you have to make the judgment of whether that is really what the amends are. If your goal is to restore your relationship and that level of trust with that son, you know, sometimes giving them money may not be the best way to make amends and earn trust.
So making amends is not about just cleaning your soul. It's about making something happen that's in the present with somebody else.
You know, in 12-step programs, they call something a living amends, so that when you make the apology, as time goes on, you change your behavior so you don't fall back into those old habits that put you in the position of having to make amends.
But what if you don't want a relationship? I remember a woman who called me up, and she said, I used to work for you many years ago. And she said, I'm calling you to make amends. I said, for what? She said, because I stole money from you. She said, I'd like to return it. Right? I said, okay, go ahead. And she did. And she sent me some money. It wasn't much. She was cleaning herself out. She was doing things. She didn't want a relationship with me. She didn't want to work with me. I didn't want her to work for me. Right?
So some things are in the moment, and just like the things you describe in your book, Mr. Kravitz, that you've got an event that happened, you look back, you have a regret about it, and you do something that changes it. But the people that you live with whom you have regrets, then that's where a living amends comes in, where your relationship going forward becomes a changed relationship as a result of making amends and changing how you behave.
So you think, Sherry and Lee, that this is about current relationships? You have to clean up the current relationships? Or do you think this is primarily about past relationships?
I think it's about both, and it can be about both. And there may be two levels of it. There may be the level at which you're trying to achieve some peace in your life so that you can go on and not only not steal money from the person you stole it from, but you've made the commitment never to steal money again from someone who you're in a trusted relationship with. In other words, that doesn't have to do necessarily with you, the former boss. It has to do with her behavior going forward in her life. In giving that money to you, she also has made a commitment not to give money, to steal money from other people.
Yeah,
to
sometimes
clean up her
it's
behavior
just saying,
going forward.
So sometimes just putting yourself out there and saying, I did it and I'm sorry and I regret it by saying it. It makes you stick with it a little more. Now, you say there are times you don't do it. There are times that you don't make amends. Like, let's say you're married 45 years, and in the second year you had a flirtation in the back of the kitchen with somebody who you met at a party. Is that something you bring to your mate and say, I want to tell you 45 years ago this is what happened?
Well, you have to say to yourself, what is going to be the result of doing that? Is that going to bring a sense of peace and wholeness and trust to our relationship right now, or is that going to all of a sudden make the whole infrastructure shaky? I mean, I had something the other day where someone wrote me, a 63-year-old man, who had said that when he was 19, he wronged his girlfriend. He didn't tell me what he did, but he wronged her. So at age 63, and he's sick, and he's probably on his death, but he wrote her a letter and sent it certified to her home, you know, apologizing and saying he wanted to say how sorry he was. Well, the problem was that her husband opened it up. And so he's writing me that this really upset him because he's not sure she got the apology, and should he forge ahead and try to work harder at telling her that. And then I wrote him back and said, well, sometimes you have to let sleeping lions lie. You feel sorry for this, but you don't want to cause questions in her own relationship with her husband or cause any tension there. That would be damaging, potentially hurting her, which is not what should be the result of your making amends.
So is that the primary part of the unfinished business that you believe needs to be taken care of? Making amends? Are there other things that people need to tie up?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is not simply just that level of apologizing. There are things even as simple as I think on a very fundamental level, we don't tell people what they mean to us until it's too late. I found myself, for example, feeling a need to make amends for missing my grandmother's funeral. I didn't go to her funeral because I was too busy working. Finally, 15 years later, it was like a magnet pulling me to her grave in Cleveland. I really needed to go visit that grave and eulogize her and tell her what she had meant to me. But in the process, I realized the very obvious thing, that this would have been so much better if I had said it to her while she was still alive. And so what I did in the book, and I felt compelled by this realization to eulogize my parents, they're still alive, but I told them in writing what I would miss if they weren't here anymore. And it was so cleansing to me, and it so much connected me more to them and also to myself. That was a form of unfinished business that has allowed me, that I tended to, and has allowed me to move ahead in a much a stronger way in my own life.
So there's this concept of optimizing your human potential.
I think that's a big thing. I think it's optimizing. We often will let the important things slip in our lives because we don't have time, we don't have energy, we have these daily urgencies. You have to put out your show. You have patience. I had magazines to put out. What has to be done now is what's important. And then some of the important things slip, and we put them off because they do take time and energy to tend to. But if you put them off too long, it's too late. You know, your dead or the person you've either wronged or neglected or haven't appreciated, that person is dead. So for me, you become your best self if you act on that type of thing now.
Okay, Lee, now there's a phenomenon we know in psychology.
Yeah.
Where parents, as they're getting older, especially as they get in their 60s, they tend to become more childlike. And in their childlikeness, they start apologizing to their children. So what happens is a person who normally has power over his offspring, like an average adult male or woman, they're kicking the kids around all over the time. And then they get to be 60 years old, and they realize the kids can now beat them up. And they're dependent on the kids. And what they do instead is they start apologizing. And they start saying, I'm sorry for what I did to you. Oh, am I sorry? Oh, I have such regrets for what I did. And people hate it. People don't want to hear those apologies. Sometimes the amends are used to manipulate the power from the other person because they now have more power than you because they're angry. Is the idea of it. So many times people are apologizing just to take away the anger of the other person.
I can see that. An apology can be cheap and it can be part of weakness, but it can also be a strong thing to do. Let me give you an example which I wish would happen to more, and actually does happen in many cases as people get older. I come from a family where people can hold grudges forever. My father hadn't spoken to his brother for 30 years. My grandmother didn't talk to her sister for 30 years. I don't even know if they even remembered what they weren't talking to each other about. But one of the things that happened in my book was that in my experience over this year is that I felt so hurt by this dysfunctional behavior in my family that I tried to bring my father and his brother together. And it wasn't by telling them, sit down and make up. That wouldn't work. It was by doing it indirectly. I took the most famous story in my family, the one my grandmother told me about how Elliot Ness had set my grandfather, who had been in organized crime, straight. And I fact-checked it to see if it was really true. And in the process, I had to ask what my father and his brother felt about that or had heard about that. And all of a sudden, I was copying them on the emails I sent around sharing information. And pretty soon, they got interested in each other again. And pretty soon they were emailing each other directly after all these years. They began by not acknowledging each other and ended up by reconciling at a very important stage of their life, you know, as they're getting older and facing the end. So I say that that apologies can be weak, but sometimes they're also a form of strength when they create a stronger bond or a bridge, or they erase this sort of cycle of reactive and angry and bad behavior that splits families up.
You know, it sounds like some apologies can be self-serving, like the one you described, Armand, and then others are really from the heart, something that that compels the person making the amends to say that they were sorry.
I don't know how much you could even trust those because, you know, if you're a weaker animal, so you're a wolf, and there's a stronger wolf than you, you bare your belly, and you feel the bearing of your belly. So in the people who apologize as manipulation to take away the power, they feel it's sincere. Oh, I'm really sorry, you know. Oh, I'm sorry because I can't beat you up anymore. I'm sorry. Please don't beat me up. So I think that apologies are important, but I think more than that, there's a different way to make amends. And I think sometimes the amends have to be made almost anonymously. I suspect that there are things that people could do that are good for other people, that if you think about somebody who you've harmed, maybe you could do them some justice without their knowing. You know, not necessarily telling them that you are there to get the rewards. What do you think of that, Lee?
Anonymity can be the highest form of charity, according to my mom, Dees. And maybe in some cases it's also the highest form of apology, although I don't equate apology with making amends. Maybe it can be a form of really helping other people. For example, there are situations that I found myself in and that some people find themselves in when, hey, you can't make an amend directly to another person because that person isn't alive. Forgive my dog here. I cannot make amends.
Well, I thought it was a cat you had.
No, I've got a cat, but I also have a barking dog and a meowing cat.
All right.
I'm besieged by animals here. But for example, one of the people I had felt a desire to make amends to had died. He was my childhood bully, just like this dog is a bully to me. My childhood bully did anything he could to sabotage me, you know, poked out my tooth in my mouth, prevented me from becoming the a captain of a baseball team, and all those sort of things. And then he died by the side of the road. He was an alcoholic. And I felt terrible for wishing him harm all those years and wanting revenge on him. And so part of making amends when somebody is not there to get it directly or someone has died is you want to make some sort of alternative, right? You want to do something in the world that might, in that person's name, for example, that might be some positive action. At least that's what an impulse is and people sometimes say to do.
I think, you know, that may be why people visit grave sites. You know, that it may be just that's why you have a grave, so that people could do things and say things to you that they may not normally have said. And that maybe it's not such a bad idea to go visit and say, you know, here's what I need. You know, I wonder if we asked our audience, which I think we will do, if you had to make amends, what would your amends be and to whom? What people would say if we take a survey of that, which I'd like to do after the break. As well as this, the living a connected life.
Yes.
I know this comment, after you die, what would you like people to say about you?
Right.
How would you answer that?
Well, I'll tell you, after going through these journeys, he tried his hardest. He worked hard at love, at being a loving person, was something, that phrase that came up to me. I think it's, you know, that phrase you use is how you would like to be remembered, which is often asked. It's because the way you want to be remembered is the way you should live. That's the reason that question is asked.
Okay, give me an example of that. So how would yours, how would we remember you?
You would remember me as someone who, when he could have chose despair or being depressed, that he tried to find his better, truer self.
Here's Lee, a man dedicated to finding his better self.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
And that's the way I would like to live my life. If I'm remembered that way, that's a pretty good thing. That's a pretty good way to live my life.
Not he made the best pasta sauce. None of that stuff.
No, I can't cook. So, you know, once I had a good fastball.
He once had a good fastball.
Yeah, had good fastball. That wouldn't work either. I don't want to be remembered for my fastball.
So since you've written the book, have you been you working on other projects?
I am right now promoting the book. And also I have a website, myunfinishedbusiness.com, where people are writing in their unfinished business stories to me and sharing their own tips about making amends and other of the topics that I touched on in the book.
Well, I'm
doing that sort of work, and I'm blogging a lot.
I want to thank you very much for having been with us today.
Yeah.
We enjoyed having you on the air and the puppies. What's the dog's name?
Oh, this dog is Mac. I have two dogs, Pip the good dog and Mac the bad dog. That one's Mac.
And
he's
so
still barking. I apologize for his
Mac
behavior.
Mac has to make amends. It's perfectly all right. And you have a cat as well.
I tell you,
Lee, you sound like you're a man who's doing the best you can to make the most out of everything. Congratulations to you.
I try.
Yeah.
Thank you very much
for being with us. Sure.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. So that's kind of an interesting thing, this unfinished business. You know, Sherry, what do we do?
It sounds like Lee was decided to live with intention rather than to just stumble forward, letting life take him along, kind of like a wave takes the sand along. He said, no, I'm gonna live with intention going forward.
Uh-huh. It's kind of interesting. So if you people were to think about your own lives, and you think about the regrets, not the regrets, the amends that you would like to make. And I love this question. After you're gone, how would you like to be remembered? You know? In fact, if we could get three words, a generous guy, a nice person, right? Knew what he wanted. That's four words. That kind of thing. What would your epitaph say? What would it be for you? And if you had to find somebody, if you had to think back over time and think back, boy, you know, there's a wrong I did that I would love to correct. Now, you are not going to get on the air and talk to us, and we're not going to say, why don't you go do it? That's not an issue. But I would be interested in hearing what it is you have to say about it. Making amends is different than apologies. You know, an amend has to do with restoring justice as much as possible. The idea is to restore in a direct way that which has been broken or damaged, that which we have broken or damaged, or to make restoration in a symbolic way if we can't do it directly. So there are certain people they say avoid. Don't run home and say to your spouse, yeah, I had a wonderful time in addiction treatment. I learned all about your righteous honesty. So I want to apologize to you for the affair I had 5 years ago. That's not what making amends is. That's not what it is according to them. But I believe there is a piece of that. I believe at the highest level of relationship, you could do that. If you both have the intention, you're both there, and you're both saying, we're going to take this on, very hard to find a partner like that. People sometimes talk about living amends, and that simply means we live differently. And amends are about a genuine change in our behavior. We take on a whole new way of life. We stop accumulating fresh insults to our character. You know, this is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music, and then we'll continue.
Relapse, prevent, trigger, intent, now drown. High strung, say X amount of words. Your solar bipolar panic disorder seems harder and harder and harder. Still you try to control you. You mold, you mold, yeah, you shape to mold. Boy, you bold, you bold, but your shape is bold. Your symptoms superficial. We'll be right back. cheat. I never knew you till you left me with the crying disease. Another curing, reassuring way to buckle the knees. So mistreated, I repeated, never blessing your sneeze. Now deleted.
That's The Amount of Words by Blue October, my friends. Remarkable music. This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel, The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bring new ideas, concepts, guests. We run across this book, Unfinished Business, with Lee Kravitz, a man who is trying to challenge himself and sell a book. And write a book about it and say, this is what you got to do. But there's a concept in here. And it has to do with making amends. In the studio with us, Lauren Sykes and Iris First, both whom had a comment about it. Let's ask them. Lauren, what was that you were saying?
Well, we're talking about making amends, but what about when you're on the other side and someone's trying to make amends to you? So I thought of an applicable quote by Bob Marley, who once said, you know, everyone's going to cause you pain, but it's up to you to determine who's worth it. So I think that's important. It's important to evaluate, you know, your needs, your wants, and who's in your life and what they're bringing to the table for you and your happiness.
Well, you mean if somebody makes amends to you,
mm-hmm.
how do you deal with it?
You evaluate their importance in your life, and if it's worth taking in the pain that they might have caused you or will continue to cause you.
Give me an example of that.
So,
let's say you got a bad father,
mm-hmm.
and he's an alcoholic father, right? Mm-hmm. Bad meaning not that alcoholic was bad, but mm-hmm. alcoholic, brutal, invasive, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
You said, that's it. I'm not going to let him be have such power in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so you say, I'm going to get rid of him. I'm going to keep him out of my life. And then he comes back in, and he says, knock, 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 I want to apologize to you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to decide whether he's worth the pain, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Good comment. Thank you. Because sometimes you may just say, I don't want to open that door.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take any more of that on. I was good. It was dead. Leave it dead.
Yeah. It's opening the flesh wounds, and if you're willing to take it on, then you might be better for it.
Good. Thank you very much. Iris.
Yes. Hi, Armand. So I was actually thinking about the attachment for the person who's making amends, the attachment to the response. Like, what happens if the other person is not gracious about it? And so making amends from a place of non-attachment is different than making it from a place of attachment where you think that the other person is supposed to respond in a certain way because they may or may not, and to still be able to feel complete with that. And there was one other thing that I was thinking of the questions that you were asking, like, what would you remember me for if I were dead? I don't know if that's exactly how you said it, but actually I did something with my own mother where I asked her a whole bunch of different questions, and out of asking these questions in a very safe way, we actually made amends in our relationship when I turned 38. So, you know, to really be able to apologize to someone and then be able to hear what they have to say, how it impacted them, really also opens up another clearing for the amends to happen.
Very interesting. Hey, Linda.
Yes.
Linda Vanella is also here. Hi there.
Hi, Armand.
What do you think?
Well, I think a lot. I think this is a whole journey that we consistently find ourselves looking around us and choosing those that we let in and out of our lives and making amends, that whole concept of fixing and opening up the journey to new life, new relationships, to me is very encouraging and very positive. However, it is a journey. And so, yes, do we allow people back into our lives that have done us...
Always a good question.
Or not? I think that's a very powerful question.
Well, what let's see what the audience thinks as well. 212-209, unless Grayson has something to say about this. Well, 212. There's a guest that we have to have on the air here one day. He's a very interesting man. You know that? And we're not gonna get you embarrassed, right? Grayson Challenger. The man who is the guy who keeps every nut and bolt of WBAI working in some way. A really fine, fine man with very few attachments. What do you think? Do you ever make amends? You think that people should come back and apologize, Grayson? Well, stoic he is. He'll get even with me. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. This team, you know, Michael G., I mean, he's part of this team. You know, we have these radio programs we do where people are all over. We have Christina sitting outside who is a major part of this as well. You'd be surprised how many people it takes to create an idea and bring you an idea that that works for you. So what would you like? Let me just think that around. If you thought around it, can you imagine what you would like to have people say about you? What do you think, Lauren? Could you think about it, or is it over your head at the moment, or under your head at the moment, or what you would think about it?
I would just want people to remember how I made them feel. Not necessarily the words that I expressed to them, but just, you know, my impact on their life, and obviously I would want it to be a positive. I just would want people to remember me with giving them a positive influence.
Mm. She affected me in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. What about you, Sherry?
That's a tough one. I hope people will remember me as curious, compassionate, creative, and courageous.
The four C's. Curious, compassionate, courageous. What was the other one? Compassionate?
No, I have to go back
confusing.
To the beginning. Curious. Creative. Compassionate and courageous and confused. Five C's.
You're a fine, fine person. What about you, Iris? You got a place there? And those of you who have an answer to this question, 212-209-2900, we're going to take your calls in just a couple of minutes.
Yes, I would want to be remembered as someone who was really committed to people having the greatest life that they could have, and really self-love and self-acceptance and implementing that.
Right.
You know, I wanted to know from you.
Oh, you want to know what I would want?
Yes, what you'd want. What would you? How would you like people to remember you?
I make a great spaghetti sauce. I really do. I mean, I make probably the best you could imagine. So I want people to remember me as being the guy who can make the great spaghetti sauce. That's a metaphor.
Don't keep it to yourself. Bring it in.
I do.
And why do you think people feel...
I do it
feel,
here now.
Why do people feel compelled to tie up loose?
Well, yeah, that's a real question. You know what I mean? I mean, if we're Buddhists, which we're not, but if we look at it, we say, let it go. Leave some loose ends. What's wrong with loose ends? You know, what's wrong with it if your hair's flyaway hair? Why does it have to be patted down? Why do you got to clean it up? What's wrong with having a lot of loose ends? Nature lives that way, you know, but nature has this funny thing. Nature has wind, and wind comes along, and it always gets rid of loose ends, right? Anything that's loose gets blown away, and so it kind of keeps things in form and shape. But how do we learn to live with looseness? How do we learn to know, live with somebody saying to you, I'm not quite sure. I don't know. You know, you say to somebody, would you like to go on vacation? And they say, I don't know. And we get angry at them for not knowing. That somebody's loose end, somebody's ambivalence, somebody's not knowing, I think that's got to be okay, too. Now, loose ends. If I have pieces in my life where I would want to make amends, sometimes I'm holding on to the very regrets. I'm holding on to it. Let it go. Let it go. I know a man. He had a wife, and he loved his wife. It was a very nice relationship, but she was not well, and he always felt like he had to take care of her. And so he was taking care of her, taking care of her, taking care of her. And then she sued him for a vicious divorce. And he's still taking care of her. And he's still in his mind saying, yeah, but she doesn't know what she's doing. I still want to take care of her. And his lawyer said to him, what are you doing? Why don't you let her go? Let go of taking care of her. That's part of those loose ends. Sometimes you just got to leave things alone. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm Herb, and it's funny that you should be talking about amends because every place I went today, I heard that going on. I went to a 10:15 AA meeting, and they were talking about the fourth step. And I was wondering what's the difference, you know, like a grudge. I remember for when you're a kid, you hold a grudge off somebody. And, you know, I just have a lot of feeling about amends. And one of the things is just acts both ways, making amends to somebody, making amends to me. If I really don't think they really feel sorry or they won't do it again, it's a bogus amend and vice versa around the other way too. That's what's going on.
You have people in your life who continue to hurt you in some way?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who?
My father walked out. I never saw him, Herbert Moore. And then my wicked stepfather, I was always afraid of him because he had knives and stuff. And he was a angry alcoholic. But he worked, you know, he worked. And I don't worry about it. I don't think about that much anymore. Something's going on where the family is very distant. So I have two sisters, one by this latest stepfather and one by my father. And she, the older one, is dying of smoking cancer. And, you know, I'm really all mixed up about her because she lives in Naples, Florida. They couldn't get away from me fast enough and vice versa. You know, we're not close.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of those cases
where,
you know, it's one of those cases, Herb, where you may not be able to get along with the person, but ethereally, strangely enough, there are a number of people I could think of. I could think of people who have harmed me in my life. And as I think about them having harmed me, I now think of them with a kind of a sadness. A sadness not just for myself, but a sadness for their character and their inability to do other than to harm. You know, and I feel sorry for your family down in Florida. I feel sorry they can't embrace you. I feel sorry they missed
the
beauty.
Well, it's a two-way street, you know.
I know, but you know, but I hear
them.
You. I hear you on the radio now, and I hear you're a beautiful man, and that you must be somebody very worth hugging.
Yeah.
Very worth having in a family, you know.
Can I ask you a little unrelated question?
Sure. Go ahead.
I think I suffer. You hear the word suffer?
I hear suffer.
Suffer from passive aggressiveness, but I can't find a real good definition of what it is. I know it ruined my life. It could ruin my life, and I'm working on it. And I call that a character defect.
Well, it's kind of okay. So what it basically means is that somebody, when they have the inability to express anger directly, will have that anger come out in surreptitious ways, such as being late in completing things. You know, it's a way of kind of getting even because you can't do it directly.
Yeah, thank you.
So it's not a behavior so much, you know. I mean, it's more a thing you do than a personality.
Yeah, with that, though, I mean, I don't feel whole as long as I'm behaving that way.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, the trouble I had earlier is when I was on hold, I couldn't hear your program. I got a radio way in on the terrace, but I couldn't hear your program.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's good for us to know.
Okay. I'm going to volunteer to do some service because this is getting crazy out here.
Good. Next Wednesday, we'll be doing a marathon drive here
at
WBAI.
All right, I'll be on the phones.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Armand DeMille, a reminder that next week starts our fund drive here at WBAI. We need all the support you can get. We will not be with you on Tuesday, but we will be with you. We're a very special program on Wednesday from 1 to 3 o'clock. You want to make a note? Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Yeah, Herman?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, last Sunday I was in church and my pastor speak of the same topic that you're talking about as it relates to how would you like to remember when your time comes? And he made a statement that he doesn't want anybody to say anything else but to say he was a good Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And using that word in the context of what a Christian should be speaks a great deal of volume. And I sort of, that's how I would want to remember.
To say something different about you. What's your name?
My name is Dennis.
Dennis, I would say he was a loving man.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I would leave it at that. He was a loving man. Because right. Good Christian is not just enough of a definition. Sometimes there's stuff that falls into that good Christian stuff. It gets a little tough. You know, does it mean that you follow all of your religious rituals necessarily? You know, but mainly it's about attitude.
But what he probably was trying to convey to us is that if you look at what the Bible said to be a good Christian, and if we follow those things, then that's what he's trying. That doesn't mean he is, but what he was trying to relate to us is that I would prefer someone to say he was a good Christian. And say if you go and look up what is in the Bible, what the good Christian means, and if he follows all of those things, then you realize that person was really, he covers all the ground.
Well, you know, what you're saying is kind of important, but it's been at the cornerstone of every religion. Every religion
right.
has the same thing. You know, there's basically make amends, live a better life. Mm-hmm. You know, unless it's jihad, unless it's live a better life and kill the infidels.
And you did said one thing that I would have to what I am going to focus in on, living your life. I don't know if you said it at one of your calls, is living your life with intention. I think
intention.
I like that. Right. I like that phrase and I like that idea.
Yeah, I would like to see that on a coffee mug. You know, they sell these coffee mugs with phrases on them. I'd like mm-hmm. to see one that says just intention. You know?
Right.
Intention. Good idea. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Sherry?
Our last caller, Dennis, made me think of what is a good Christian? Somebody who does unto others as he or she would like done unto him or herself?
Is that what Christian is?
I mean, I think that that's a part of Christianity. I mean, having a different religious background, I'm not sure, but I think that that's probably a part of it. I'd love to know what the breakdown, what his pastor said last Sunday, how his pastor sees a good Christian.
Good Christian is if you put money in the plate.
Oh.
No. Of course we mean intention. Of course we mean intention.
Yes.
Funny words. 212-209-2900. One more caller if we can. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Armand.
Good afternoon.
Great show as usual.
Thank you.
I have to make amends with myself. Why? Because I married the wrong person, and I cannot leave. I forgive myself every day for that.
Yeah, I can understand. And it's a difficult thing, forgiving yourself for not leaving her, because it's not really leaving her. It's for continuing the mistake,
continuing
is what you're saying.
Yeah.
right? I have married the wrong person, and I continue the mistake. Now, the mistake may not be that you have to leave her. The mistake may be that you're not in an honest relationship with her. What prevents you from making the relationship honest?
First of all, honest in what way?
Tell the truth. The way you feel, the way you are.
I did.
I know you did once.
I did once, yeah.
But to continue to, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to keep your truth present.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's better than even quitting. I think that's one of the greatest gifts that people could give each other. I'm going to tell you the truth of how I feel, and I'm not leaving. That's terrific stuff.
Yeah, I did. And the thing is, once I did, apparently she, I don't know if she believed me or not, but she knew also that I would not leave her because we have two kids together. I try to be the best I can with them. You know, I try to be the best father I can. And, you know, I cannot help but being responsible.
I understand. Your name?
My name is Samuel.
Samuel, thank you very much for calling. We're going to have to be going. One day you may have to make amends to your children for sticking around a marriage where it might have gotten a little more peaceful had you left. You know? One day. We'll be, thank you for calling. We'll be, listen, my friends, I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. And be sure to tune back in and thank all of you here in the studio for your help today.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, those folks at the DeMille Center for helping us, helping Armand. Flawless program. Phones were impeccable. And thank you, the callers, for making the programs. The